Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Nationally, about 62 million Americans live in homeowners association, condominium communities, residential cooperatives, and other planned sorts of communities. Those options have been like a happy housing medium over the last 20 or 30 years, ownership without the hassles, better investments, less rental, less maintenance worries than a standalone house with a yard. The economy and the concurrent foreclosure crisis, however, has changed that picture a bit. Later on, we're going to talk with an attorney who represents condo and homeowners associations. We'll also chat with a real estate consultant who can give us a closer look at Central Ohio and how it's stacking up against the rest of the nation. Joining us now is Patrick Coleman. He has founded the Condo Homeowners Association educational website. He also has written a guide about planning for and explaining how such associations operate. The book is called Condos, Townhomes, and Homeowner Associations, How to Make Your Investment Safer. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Hi, Ann. I'm delighted to be here.
To our listeners, I want to know, are you stuck with a condo, and what are you doing to get unstuck? We'd like to hear your story. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Patrick, the book, as I said, Condos, Townhomes, and Homeowner Associations, How to Make Your Investment Safer. What does a homeowner association have to do with the value of a person's investment in a condominium?
Theoretically, the value added that a homeowner association brings is that there would be a uniform level of maintenance, and that hopefully would help to maintain property values within that neighborhood. That's when it's well run, though. It's key on the quality of the management and the quality of the board of that particular association.
If it's poorly run, which is partly what inspired your book in the first place, if it's poorly run, is that necessarily something that takes away from the value?
It can. It can. Because what I like to say is, after 35 years of developers having a sales phrase of no maintenance, low maintenance, especially for townhomes and condos, if you stop to think about that, no maintenance, low maintenance, it's not true, you know. So you need to just be aware that just because you've moved into a condominium doesn't mean that home maintenance is going to go away. It becomes more of a collective issue. And even if you do move in and you don't have to do physical labor, what I like to tell people is you need to at least go to a few meetings a year, read the monthly newsletter, and stay mentally engaged to help maintain your property.
How do you, before you buy or move in or even consider this, how do you know how a homeowner's, or I mean, how an association is working? How do you know if it works before you buy?
That is a great question. And up until now, people didn't look at that very closely. I think the gold standard is that if there's a reserve study done, it's only required in about 5 states out of 50. Reserve study is a roadmap to the financial future, you know, plotting out when major repairs and replacements are going to take place and if they're on target to be funded. You know, the gold standard is to take a look at that and compare how much they have in the reserve with what the reserve study calls for. Short of that, you would need to look at the financials at any association, and it's really a red flag if the association can't even produce those. Taking a step further, you know, you need to look carefully at whether an association is purely run by neighborhood volunteers or if they have a part-time outside property management firm providing some services. And then those are important distinctions.
My guest is Patrick Coleman. He is author of Condos, Townhomes, and Homeowner Associations, How to Make Your Investment Safer. If you're stuck in a townhouse or a condominium or something like that with a homeowner association, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And when I say stuck, I guess we do kind of mean the pejorative, the negative aspect of that. Tell us how you're getting unstuck or what you're trying to do to get unstuck. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Patrick, how much of the association's success or failure is based on relationships and personalities?
Almost everything. I think it's so important that the people who volunteer to be on the board are people of goodwill. Sometimes, unfortunately, there are people who have a need for power or Even in some Disney films, you know, there's been a neighbor lady who walks around with a clipboard. And, you know, that's really the kind of stereotype that is out there. But hopefully it's very counterproductive. I think anybody who volunteers in a board member position knows that they're constantly in the business of building goodwill. It just goes with the territory in that kind of job.
What was your experience that inspired your website and the book?
Well, I still live in the starter home that I moved into 29 years ago, which is simply a little apartment in a condo in an older apartment building that was converted. And we're the kind of development that is most prone to have problems early on. And that is when an old apartment building is converted, say it's 30 years old, I call the paper conversion, where often the developer might just go down to the county courthouse and file papers to turn it into a condominium. But, you know, the roof is old, the siding is old, the pipes are old, and it's just a problem waiting to happen. And on top of that, there might be an unrealistically low monthly fee that wouldn't begin to cover all the renovations. And that's what we found where I live. And it has been a real fun journey for all of us to face that, to figure out how much money we would need to spend. In fact, we had a plan from 2003 to 2017 to make it affordable to do a gut renovation of our property. So it does take a lot of planning, but it's doable.
Typically, in a typical condominium complex, what does a homeowner association do?
Well, it can be a whole range. You know, at the light end, it is a homeowner association of single-family homes. And most new suburbs are homeowner associations. And if they just have a clubhouse and a pool and maybe an entryway, the monthly fees are relatively small. But if they have to do more heavy-duty budget items like paving the streets and providing streetlights, it's more like running a small city, and they will need more money. At the other extreme are condominiums with much shared infrastructure, where you share the roof, you share, you know, the siding, you share sometimes even the utilities, heat and water. So there's so many more shared expenses that your monthly fee would be higher.
614-292-8513, or give us a call or give us an email at allsides@wosu.org. You know, it all sounds like it could be a lot of politics. I mean, for some people, is it better just to pay your fees and stay out of it?
Well, a lot of people tend to do that, especially when things are going well. And it's not uncommon that a lot of associations have a hard time getting a quorum for a meeting, you know, their official annual meeting or maybe a twice-a-year meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But I answer questions from owners in the grocery store, out in the parking lot all the time, and they never come to meetings. But I think that if they get the information that they need, that things go well. So a lot of times people, they aren't that involved. And that it's kind of typical of nonprofit organizations where whatever kind of organization it is, they can have over the years ups and downs depending on the quality of the folks who are guiding it. And sometimes when things are going really well, the attendance at meetings and the participation really drops. And if they start to veer off, then people start to come back again and realize that they're needed to help run it.
If you're the type of person that isn't particularly neighborly,
mm-hmm.
And I don't mean it to be a negative, it's just that you're not that type of person to hang over the fence and that kind of a thing. Is a condominium or, you know, these kind of associations a good idea?
What a great question. That is so on the money. I think there's some personalities that are much more, they fit in better. An elderly friend of my mom's mentioned just recently, she said, you know, living in a condo is a give and take thing. And that's so true. In one of the videos that I have on the website, a guy who had been in a home for 40 years and now he's president of his condo association, he mentioned one of the things that people don't realize is that you don't have 100% control, you know, especially over common element features. So you just need to deal with that. But for some folks who, especially if they want, in my experience, real perfection, there's some people who might call about some of the grass not being cut or when the bushes were trimmed, they didn't like the exact shape of that. I mean, there's little tiny things that if they had their own home, you know, they could be on top of it, but these little tiny details drive them mad. And to me, those are the folks that have the toughest time with this kind of association living.
So you really should consider your own personality before you do this. It's just not just about an investment.
Right, right. It is. But I used to think that if there were enough problems that maybe condos and patio homes would just go away. But if you look at the demographics mm-hmm. of 78 million baby boomers getting ready to retire, I call this a form of assisted living light. And as long as we realize that, you know, there are a lot of services provided, and it's much cheaper than the government providing housing, and it's much cheaper than real assisted living, you know, a corporate assisted living. But as long as we realize that housing has cost, it ought to be run by the numbers, you check the numbers before you buy in, I think that it becomes a system that's much more workable. It's not really that complex.
Now, your book looks at overall across the country. We're going to be talking with an analyst in a few minutes about Ohio specifically, and with a lawyer who represents homeowner associations in Ohio. But generally, are there better states than others to own a condominium in?
And I don't really think so. You know, I live in Louisville, and when I first started to see that we needed to roll up our shirt sleeves and really get busy, I drove to meetings in Cincinnati, even came up to some meetings in Columbus and Indianapolis because we didn't have any in Louisville at the time. But then when I went further to New York and California and Florida, I noticed that neighborhoods are neighborhoods and personality types are personality types. And it's all local, and the people and the situations are unbelievably similar. So I don't really see that many differences, whether it's a co-op in Manhattan or a patio home in Columbus, Ohio. The people are people.
I smell a sitcom. When people come to you with questions, not in the supermarket on your own particular regarding your own particular association, but generally, what is the most common question that you hear from people around the country?
I think sometimes when people do a reserve study and they see how often it is that associations start out underfunded, you know, the monthly fees really aren't enough to take care of the new roof and other things, they go, how did you persuade people to raise the taxes?
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest question. And, you know, most of the questions I think the people who volunteer in their associations get are routine maintenance type questions, and also that they want enforcement of rules about a neighbor who's not picking up after their dog and, you know, things like that. But I think when I get questions about how do I do this, it is to try to communicate with everybody, all the other owners, what our costs are going to be and what the plan is to try to fund that. And what happens if we don't fund it? And unfortunately, if you don't fund it, on PBS in late November, I was interviewed, and we did this down in Miami, where three 12-story buildings, which were built in the 1960s,
right,
were condemned. And that has happened in cities around the country where after it gets to be a certain age, you know, folks can keep saying, well, let's put it off, and then the city steps in and just says this is uninhabitable. So that is an unfortunate ending, but it can and does happen.
Sometimes it happens because not only have they not planned for the future, but there's a lot of people going into foreclosure and there's not the economy of scales of enough people pitching in and
right,
paying for it. And we're going to get to that in the next segment. And also Patrick Holman is going to join us in the final segment and take your questions and comments. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher online at WOSU.org/AllSides. You can listen to new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. You can also find All Sides on Facebook and Twitter, subscribe to podcasts, and preview upcoming programs. Discover more about WOSU and All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU.org/AllSides. And it's 25 degrees in downtown Columbus. A little bit of snow today, a high right around 26. A slight chance of some light snow tonight and cold, a low of 13 degrees. Clouds for Thursday and a high of 23 degrees. And a slight chance of some snow Thursday night, just a few flurries, a low of 15. And looking ahead to Friday, there's a slight chance of snow and a high of 25. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides. Joining us now, Marie Witkowski. Marie is a Columbus attorney specializing in condominium and homeowner associations. Welcome to the show, Marie.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Rob Vogt. Rob is a real estate consultant in Columbus. Welcome to the show, Rob. Hello, Rob.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
We're talking about the pros and cons, the good, the bad, and the ugly of condominium ownership. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Do you have a story about being stuck in a condo and trying to get out? Tell it. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Rob, condos are more sensitive to economic downturn.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, I think that oftentimes developers put an awful lot of product in one location, and when you have a number of units for sale at one specific location, any immediate response by the market that is negative has kind of a rolling effect throughout the development. So if there's a perception that units aren't selling well in a particular development, that entire development essentially shuts down and it's difficult to sell. Now, I guess I should also clarify that there's kind of a difference between existing condominiums or resales, as we call them, or the new sales. And I think the new sale issue has been certainly grabbing a lot of the headlines recently in Columbus, with a number of properties just not able to sell new condominiums. And it's certainly true with the resales as well. Trying to sell an existing unit in a sold-out project it has also been quite a challenge.
What's the difference between new sales? Why are new sales more difficult?
Well, I think the perception that the real estate market is soft, and frankly, it's not a perception. It's a reality that we all know that homes aren't selling in Columbus, which is true throughout the entire country right now due to the recession. So I think that they are just mirroring the national trends that we see in terms of real estate trends.
Rob, your firm, Vogt Santer Insights, is a national real estate research firm based in Columbus. During this particular economic downturn, which is, of course, the worst that we in our lifetimes, I imagine from the sound of your voice, what has happened to the condo market in Central Ohio?
Well, I think developers tend to have somewhat of a short memory that we saw an awful lot of success with condominiums in the middle part of the last decade. It became a very hot housing option. We had an awful lot of units that were built downtown. We had a lot of incentive programs to build downtown, and developers built in response to that. We also had a number of suburban condominium developments that were quite successful. Lifestyle Communities is a good example, where they were able to develop a product and sell to some of the first-time home buyers, and that product sold extremely well. And when we saw a lot of people experiencing this success, I think we ended up seeing a lot of developers came out and said, hey, I can do that, and we build an awful lot of product that right now is sitting empty.
Is it smart that some of them are now renting? Because it's my cursory study shows that a lot of associations limit the percentage of rentals.
That is correct, and I think that they vary by condominium development, but in terms of the rental market today, that it's a very good strategy because of the very hot rental market that we have right now. In fact, many of the existing condominiums that were on the market in downtown are currently being rented at some rental rates that far exceed what we've seen in Columbus in a number of years. So whereas the condominium market is soft, the rental market is very strong, and I think it's a very good strategy. Now, I think there are some arguments that condominium owners might make that says that, listen, I don't want a renter living next to me. That doesn't make sense. But when you consider that many of these units sell or rent for $1,500 to $2,000 a month, they have very similar socioeconomic profiles. The other important thing is that I think our perception of ownership, home ownership, is changing over time as we have learned the lessons of the recession. And I think that people are beginning to favor renting over owning by a very large margin. We see a lot of empty nesters, for example, older adults who don't want the commitment or home ownership responsibilities that are looking to rent. And that's why I think I'm very bullish on the condominium market into the future, that this is going to be a very desired housing option.
Marie Witkowski, a lot of condominium buildings, as we just talked about, are now renting units to stay afloat. What's the impact on resident associations?
It's correct. There's a lot of associations out there that don't look favorably on renters. Some of the reasons may not be factual, but they believe renters may not take as good care of the units or care so much about property values as owners do. And in some cases that's true, and in others it's not. But the bottom line is the associations themselves are allowed to enforce all of their deed restrictions against the owners in the community and the renters. So you're not left without any options. And it is true that certain associations will look to put into place in their deed restrictions on those rentals, either capping them or only allowing certain units that are grandfathered in when it was built, for instance, to continue with that renting privilege. So you have to look at the deed restrictions, particularly before you buy in a condominium, if you're thinking of renting, to make sure you do have that ability to do that.
Can the associations control the terms of a rental? In other words, it has to be at least a year, that kind of thing?
That is very, very common. In the initial condominium documents, a declaration is always filed that contains the deed restrictions, and very oftentimes it'll say in there that a lease has to be of at least a year, or they'll put into place rules that are even more restrictive than that for those leases.
Rob Vogt, in his Sunday column, Kenneth Harney wrote about some recertification deadlines for the Federal Housing Association. The president of one national consulting firm quoted in his column called the impact a travesty unfolding. Do you know about this?
I did not read the column, no.
Okay. Marie, do you know about it?
I did not see the column either. I know that those deadlines have been pushed back because the FHA had changed a lot of its regulations so that all condominiums have got to be approved on an entire project basis as opposed to an individual unit. You can't go in and have an individual unit approved for that type of financing. So you've got to get your whole project. And they had set deadlines for everyone that were all going to come due this past December. And I think it was going to be an administrative nightmare essentially for the FHA. So they basically came out and said, we're going to extend these deadlines into the next year in order to give people a chance to get recertified, or else it was really going to put a halt on the FHA being able to finance units in condominiums and hold up a lot of sales probably.
So this is about FHA qualified units, which means it's a lower price point, right?
Not necessarily. Okay. The association itself can decide to go out. Oftentimes it works out that way, but they can go out and decide. Oftentimes developers do it at the beginning of the project. They get the project certified for FHA lending. And what happened is if you were already certified, they said those certifications are all going to end in December of 2010, and you have to recertify. So now it's been put on these associations that oftentimes these boards weren't running this at the time it was originally done, mm-hmm. to go out and try and figure out with their property managers, attorneys, whoever's assisting them, how to go through that recertification process.
Can I chime in? Patrick?
Patrick?
On the FHA, as I understand it, this is kind of a broad view, but it had been only a smaller percentage of condos and other homes that had been FHA-backed, like maybe 5%, and grown to about 20% more recently. So it's become much more common. But what the FHA and other lenders are trying to do is lower the risk, and I mean, from a big-picture perspective. And they know that some condo associations, where there are far too many renters than owners, or there's other key problems where they don't have a reserve fund or the maintenance is bad, mm-hmm. they don't want to make loans in those kinds of places because they've lost money. So they've started to quantify that, and the perception has been that these initial rules are too draconian, and especially during a long downturn, some associations couldn't meet the, say, there'd been at least 50% of the people had to be owner-occupants. But there's some lower-end associations that could meet that. So I think you're starting to see in this, plus insurance companies, private sector financial institutions are starting to set some ground rules about where they will make loans, and the association has to be well-run and well-financed, or they don't want to put their money there.
Okay. Rob Vogt, how will the market bounce back? When will the market bounce back, and will condos lag?
I think condominiums will lag. I think one of the things that we see, for example, in the support of very high-end condominiums here in Columbus is that an awful lot of empty nesters are the ones who end up buying those units. And if they're not able to sell their house in the suburbs, it's going to be difficult for them to buy a new condominium or an existing condominium that's at the higher price point. So I do think that the condominium sales in the long run will probably lag a little bit behind single-family homes as these older adults try to sell their house. The other fact is going to be getting confidence among younger buyers to feel good about buying a condominium and believe that it's going to have some appreciation and value. So both of those factors, I think, are going to contribute to a slower rate of sales for condominiums in the coming years.
But long term, as Patrick Holman mentioned, the baby boomers are aging out now, and they need a place to live. Are cities like Columbus that have a lot of this new property out there better situated than others?
I think so. I'm impressed with the variety of choices that we have in Columbus, and we are really well situated to respond to that. With double-digit increases in the number of empty nesters over the next 5 years here in Columbus, I think we're going to see a lot of folks making that decision to move into a condominium, which they really did in the earlier part of the 2000s decade. So they will return. It's just taking some time to get some confidence and being able to sell their house to move into these units.
Rob Vogt of Vogt Santer Insight, real estate consultant, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Moving on, 614-292-8513. Marie Rutkowski is still with us. She's an attorney with Kamen and Cusimano.
Cusimano, correct.
Law firm in Columbus. She specializes in representing homeowners associations. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Are you stuck in a condo and want to figure out how to get out? Do you have a plan? Let us know what your plan is, 614-292-8513. And Susan, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
This is such an important topic, I've never heard anybody talk about this before, so congratulations on that.
Thanks, Susan.
I wonder if there is a law that condo associations are required to form, or the person who runs the condo association is required to file Form 1120H, which is a homeowner association U.S. tax return, which for annually. And if it's required, how do you enforce that if you're part of a condo association?
Marie?
Susan, yes, there is a law that you have to file that tax return annually, and there's a long form and a short form. And really the best thing to do, if you're on the board, it's easy because you can talk to the other board members and seek an accountant to help and assist in that process. Oftentimes, if you have anyone on your board that has accounting experience, if your finances are simple enough, you may be able to do it without going to an accountant, but that's always the best course of action. But it definitely, if your board's not doing that, it's worth bringing it to their attention that they should be doing that.
If there's one person who is running the income and expenses and that person does not share it with the rest of the owners, is there something you could recommend for that?
Certainly.
Because it's a pretty powerful position for somebody to have.
It is. And you as an owner have rights, and they are in the Ohio law that you have the right to see all the financial data for your condominium. So, I don't want to encourage litigation. It's awfully costly. But if it takes, getting out to the other owners and reaching out and saying, look, this isn't right that these financial records are being withheld, you do have rights under the law to get access to those. So, you may want to have to seek your own personal attorney to discuss that if it comes to that length. But the best thing is to try and go out and get some other owners on board and then approach the rest of the board members with that.
Well, that was my final question to the author or whoever. If he and Kim, what do you do about condo associations where the rest of the people just simply don't care?
Patrick?
Apathy is a tremendous problem. It just is part of the picture. I've heard it said before that if you really want to have a quorum and a big turnout for a meeting, tell people you're going to raise the rates or you're going to have a special assessment, and then they'll be there.
Uh-huh.
But apathy always is a big problem. But again, you know, how do you beat that? I think in some ways it can be a good sign. You know, we constantly have our little newsletters at every door, and the board members are dispersed throughout the property, and they always stop and talk with people. So it's kind of an informal information network that's out there. And people, between phone calls and emails and stopping us, they find out what they need to find out. Plus, we always do our annual budget, and I've got samples of that for different types of associations in the book and a balance sheet. And the only way to build trust is to have that kind of transparency. Now, every now and then, because you have these 2 million people in the United States who volunteer for their board every year, 2 million people, they almost always walk in cold without training. And sometimes, you know, maybe they come from a private sector background where you never release the financials, but that's not how it's done inside of associations. It's more like a small city, and you have to usually most state laws are that you have to disclose the budget. Marie could always address what the Ohio details are, but that's a basic and a given. You deserve to see that. My heavens, it's your money.
Right. Well, thank you very much again for the topic.
Thanks, Susan. Well, Marie, is that a law?
That is a law. They have to disclose that budgetary and financial information to the owner. So if one board member is wrangling control of the rest of the board and refusing to disclose that, you really need to try and get some other owners involved and the rest of the board members involved to take some action to try and get that person off the board, it sounds like would be the best thing to do. And there's mechanisms to do that in each association's governing documents.
Okay, we have to take another quick break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Marie Rutkowski. She's an attorney who represents homeowners associations in the Columbus area. And also Patrick Coleman. He's the author of a book. It's called Condos, Townhomes, and Homeowner Associations, How to Make Your Investment Safer. Return with us on All Sides at 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Rosano Jr., Josiah, Isaac, Madison, Elijah, and Olivia. She was the one crying. They were born June 9th, 13 weeks early, weighing a total of 10 pounds. Now, after their six-month checkup, they each weigh 11 to 13 pounds. Proud mother Mia McGee says they are developing on...
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
And you're listening to 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides will be here. And as the first big wave of children diagnosed with autism-related disorders moves beyond high school, how do we prepare autistic young adults for employment or higher education? And how do we prepare the workplace to accommodate the needs and recognize the special talents of adults on the autism spectrum? Join us for that discussion at 11 o'clock for All Sides with Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Columbus College of Art and Design. Creative Futures begin in Saturday morning art classes for children and youth starting February 5th. Information and online registration at www.ccad.edu.
25 degrees in downtown Columbus, light snow today, a high of 26, a slight chance of a little snow tonight, and a low of 13 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly of owning a condominium in this economy, wherever. If you have a question or comment for us, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests right now are Marie Rutkowski. She's an attorney with Kamen and Cusimano in Columbus. She represents homeowner associations. And also with us, Patrick Coleman. He is author of Condos, Townhomes, and Homeowner Associations, How to Make Your Investment Safer. Patrick lives in a homeowner association development. 614-292-8513 is that number again. Marie, I read this quote in the Condominium Associations Institute newsletter or online on their website. High delinquency rates put a lot of pressure on associations to meet their obligations to the homeowners who are paying their fair share. When some owners, including banks that have foreclosed on homes and now own them, don't pay their share, other homeowners often must make up the difference in higher regular assessments or special assessments. In 2009, some 14 states had enacted so-called super lien laws that would ensure that up to 6 months of association fees are paid before all other liens are settled in a foreclosure. There was an effort to get such a law enacted in Ohio during the last two-year session, which ended in December. What's changed since then in Ohio? Anything?
Well, unfortunately, we did. My firm was really active, in fact, in trying to get that law enacted the last legislative session. And the session ended up ending with it dying, so to speak, on the floor. And we're trying to get that reintroduced as soon as possible. What that law does for people living in condominium and homeowner associations is it says if you're hit by a foreclosure, and sometimes those foreclosures where the bank is coming in can last for a year, 2 years, in extreme cases even longer than that. That whole time, if you have an owner that's not paying your assessments, that can amount to a large amount of money that is being taken away from your budget and your maintenance concerns. What the super lien law does is it says in that foreclosure, we're going to put the association ahead of the bank during a certain time period, perhaps 6 months, for instance, where we're going to continue to get your maintenance fees paid even though the unit's in foreclosure. So what it does is it's going to be a way to assist associations that are being hard hit during this foreclosure crisis. And in a lot of other states, it successfully is working to do just that.
In other states, the banks have opposed such laws. I know in Ohio, saying that they increase the cost and complexity of lending. What has happened in other states with the banks?
We have not found hard evidence, and we've reached out to other states where this has been in place. They've got the super lien laws, and to people in the banking industry, and said, can you provide us some numbers, some statistics to show that this has, in fact, hurt? And that evidence is just not there. So it's a way and an argument that's been brought up by a lot of the banking lobbyists and things in opposing our efforts to get this law passed. But, again, we haven't seen the evidence that it's really had that impact at all. And in the long run, and it really is, the banks have an interest in these properties. They're often buying them at the foreclosure sales. So what these fees are doing that are being collected are helping to maintain the bank's investment as well.
You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you have a question or comment for our guests. Jane, you're a real estate agent, and you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. It's Jan.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. And as I was listening to your conversation and comments, I'm actually making my way to show a condo in the Dublin area right now, which is kind of ironic in this weather. But what I wanted to suggest is to anyone out there who is contemplating purchasing a condo, I think that it's really critical for them to get with a realtor that can really help set some direction and some goals for them as well. For example, realtors are very capable of helping to size up a buyer's financial situation and to get them associated with a lender that may be able to have programs that fit their individual needs. So that's one aspect. The second aspect is that realtors can also help prospective buyers understand which condominium communities have held their values better than others, as well as when a purchase contract is written, there's actually a clause in the purchase contract which the buyer can ask for the condominium association information, the deed restrictions, mm-hmm. and the condo docs to be part of the review that they have the opportunity to see prior to making a decision to move forward. So that information can, you know, be requested right up front. And if an attorney who is capable of understanding the sometimes several hundred pages of these condo docs is involved in the review, it can be very helpful to the buyer in making good buying decisions.
You know, Patrick, from reading, you know, your book and just preparing for this, I have to say it'd be nice to have an advocate, wouldn't it?
It would. There's an 11-year-old business model in San Jose. It started their nest throughout California, where for about $375, like, you know, of a brick-and-mortar home inspection, this new idea, ironically born in Silicon Valley, is about $375. They go in and check the financial documents and compare how much is in the reserve versus what the reserve study says. And sometimes a reserve study can be 50 to 100 pages and pretty difficult to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there's a private sector innovative business ideas that will help here, and I think that's a great thing.
Jan, thanks for your call and good luck on your sale.
Oh, thank you very much.
Take
good
care.
Luck to you.
Thank you. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Mike, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hello. I live in a condominium development, and my condominium has adopted a rule that bans all leases, not just some leases. And I was wondering if the guests had any thoughts on how to get that changed, and also if they think that's a good idea to have such a rule.
Patrick?
Well, I would defer to Marie on that.
Marie?
Okay. those types of flat-out restrictions in court cases across the country have oftentimes been struck down for being too restrictive. As a general note, most of the time you've got to have some reasonable exceptions in there with regard to leasing. So I would say in terms of getting it changed to the caller's question on how to change that, you know, if your board just recently enacted it, they probably had to go out to your owners and get at least 75% vote to pass that. And the only way you're really going to get it changed is to get a push to further amend your documents to either put in some more reasonable exceptions or to take that out entirely. But I will say across the country, when it's been that restrictive, traditionally the courts have thrown those out.
Thank you, Mike.
That is also what I had noticed. This is Patrick.
I wanted
to let Marie comment on the Ohio legal situation first. But sometimes boards, they might even have a rule that they come up with absolutely no pets and no, you know, just ironclad. And it ends up kind of not being good for the association.
Mm-hmm. Particularly in this economy, right?
Right.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Let's have a happy call now, 614-292-8513. Judy, you're the happy caller.
Yes, I am a happy caller. I'm a happy owner of a condo.
Okay.
And I've been on and off the condo board several times, and I've lived here for quite a long time. I understand that condo living is not for everybody, but I will say that there are many well-maintained and well-run condo associations that aim for transparency in their board work, that they want all the owners to know everything that's going on. It's really difficult because it's communal living and everybody has a say in what goes on, but there is a board that must make the decisions, and not everybody is used to working in that kind of atmosphere.
Well, Judy, Patrick, or Marie, any comments on that?
Well, I think Judy is right on the money. It is like communal living. Sometimes, well, I'm always making comparisons when I give talks, and I remind people that if they were in a fraternity or a sorority when they were in college and they happened to live in the frat house or the sorority house, that there's just a lot of similarities. Sometimes people ask if somebody stops paying their maintenance fee, you know, why the association should care. And I say, what if there were a sorority house and one of the sisters unfortunately stopped paying, you know, her part? Would the others eventually have to act? And it's yes. So there is that, definitely that communal aspect to it.
I would piggyback on what Patrick just said. One of the key things, and we haven't talked a ton about it, we've kind of danced around it a little bit, is how important it is to make sure everyone is paying your assessments in this type of environment, and that's going to lead to the happy community that we're talking about. If your board is not being aggressive on collecting those assessments, all the other owners are going to suffer, and those delinquency problems really tend to spread, especially if the economy is not doing well as it is. So it's really important.
Judy, thanks for your call.
We have to be careful about our terminology in not using the word assessment also. The condos have operating budgets, and then they have reserve budgets also. Assessment would to me connotate that they're going to ask everybody to give money for a specific project, whereas if you have a reserve fund, there's money in the budget to do the big jobs, and you don't have to have assessments.
In a perfect world.
Well, that's how condos should be run.
Well, I was speaking of just your general monthly, your regular monthly assessments that you are contributing to the budgets. You do need to make sure that if owners stop paying their monthly assessments and become delinquent, that you take action.
Okay.
Correct.
Judy, thank you.
You're welcome.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Nancy. She says, I am a condo association president, and your guests indicate that rental caps, percentages of the total number in condo communities, are related to not wanting quote-unquote renters as neighbors. The situation in our case is that we are told lenders will not give preferential rates to potential purchasers if more than 10% of the units are leased. This appears to be a requirement of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Is this still the case? Marie?
10% is low. I believe most of the guidelines are around the 50% mark. So 10% would be pretty low as far as not getting that financing. The financing guidelines change pretty often, though. I haven't heard ones that low. Patrick, do you know about that?
No. Okay. No.
We have an email from Sarah. I bought a condo in 2005 for $130,000. I thought it was a good investment for a young 20-something, but now I need a larger place and want to move. I have been trying to sell my condo for 18 months. I have lowered the price several times. Now I am trying to give the condo away for $115,000, and still no one comes to my open houses, and I have no offers. I know the market is bad, but I feel so stuck. Any advice, Patrick? Because that's probably a pretty common set of lyrics.
Unbelievably common. I've seen really upscale condo towers in downtown areas in mid-sized cities that were selling at $300 a square foot, and they ended up having to auction off their unsold properties at less than $100 a square foot. So it's the worst economic crisis in 80 years. So that's what we're dealing with here.
So maybe if she doesn't have to move, don't.
Yes, and just this morning in the newspaper and in the AP story, it's that since the records were kept in 1948, there are fewer people moving, making long-distance moves to jobs because they can't sell their homes. So it's like another kind of a lock on dynamism within the U.S. economy is that right now people are having a hard time moving from one city to another city.
Mm-hmm. Ken, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I wanted to hear what your guests have to say about the legislation here in Ohio of 4, 5, 6 years ago that required each condo association to have an adequate repair and maintenance fund.
Kind of the reserved fund.
The reserve fund. Mm-hmm. And how rigidly are those enforced?
Marie?
The state law changed pretty drastically in 2004. It requires all condominiums to be fully funding your reserves, which means you've looked at your capital items. Ideally, you've gotten a professional reserve study done, which we discussed earlier in the program, and you're following that study. In other words, when you get that study, it's going to tell you what you need to be putting away each year to be fully funding. And the board, at their own option, without going to owners, is supposed to be now following that funding plan. The only way you can avoid and not fully fund is if you've gone to your owners, fully disclosed the reserve study, and then gotten a majority of the owners to say we're waiving this requirement under the Ohio law. So under Ohio, you really are obligated to be fully funding, and the only way to know you're doing that is to get that professional reserve study with some assurance.
Thanks, Ken, for your call.
Thank you.
614-292-8513. We just have a few more minutes and lots of calls on tap. Ron, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for that. My wife and I are moving to the area from eastern Ohio here to Columbus. And one of the concerns that we have is that when we look at condo fees, if we take that condo fee and put it into a mortgage of a freestanding home, would we be further ahead?
Well, the only thing I can say, this is Patrick, the mm-hmm. author, mm-hmm. is that just like a reserve study and what amount would be needed at an individual association, I think everybody's situation, you need to look at the particular single-family home in that particular condo. I know, to answer your question, I know of no rule of thumb. In my book, we do 5 sample associations from high-rises to patio homes, et cetera. But we also, just for comparative purposes, had to engineers run numbers on the maintenance cost of a single-family home because usually we never think like that.
Right.
So we do have those in as a comparison. But I've throughout my book, I've got these little disclaimers that have a snowflake on that, and that's to remind people that I'm teaching about broad principles, and you need to run the numbers on whatever properties that you're looking at for your own situation. Unfortunately, there's no rule of thumb.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
We have time for just one more call, and I'm going to turn to Joe from Columbus. You're a bookkeeper for 10 homeowner associations. We only have about a minute and a half left. What's your story?
Well, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I specifically focus on homeowners associations as opposed to condos. So that, as you probably have been discussing, there is a difference. But in general, you know, up until about 3 years ago when things went bad, everybody was paying their dues. Now that's not the story. Problem is, in order to try and collect from people that are delinquent, you know, when the board finds out, yes, you can hire an attorney, you can add the fees that the attorney charges on the collection. The problem is, if these people have no money, basically, they're going to lose the money that they were owed, plus they have the attorney's fees, and a lot of them are hesitant to do that. And then also, in dealing with the banks, in some cases when they foreclose, if you look at Franklin County's website to monitor when the property or title has transferred in order to try mm-hmm. to collect from the banks, mm-hmm. they're not willing to, they don't want to pay because sometimes you'll see that it never shows that the transfer occurred, and they just basically won't, you know, pay. And so, of course, you know, obviously as a corporation, they have attorneys that they will tell you, well, you know, you're going to need to talk to our attorney, and right away the board say, again, we're going to have to get our own, and it's going to cost money, and they more or less just let it go.
You know, Marie, 15 seconds.
I mean, we're very aggressive against the banks. We would put the lien on, and you can go back to look when the confirmation of sale was filed in the case, and sometimes you do have to fight it out, but we've been extremely successful in collecting against the banks during their period of ownership. So you do have to go back and look at the case details.
Lots of details. Joe, thanks for your call. Sorry there wasn't more time to get to more calls. Thanks for all your calls and your emails. That's all the time we have. My guest, Patrick Holman, Condo Homeowners Association educational website founder and also author of Condos, Townhomes, and Homeowner Associations, How to Make Your Investment Safer. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Ann.
Also, Marie Rutkowski. She's an attorney with Kamen and Cusumano. Thanks for joining us, Marie. Appreciate
it. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Ann.
All right. Thank you for joining us as well. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.